I'm going to do a series of lessons that I've wanted to do for some time on the parables. So this is a pretty good introduction, and I made, 20 copies or so. And David, would you help pass these out, please? But it's something that you can have, and kind of we'll kind of go over a number of these things. And today we're going to just kind of have an introduction to the parables, and I think that will probably be one of the most important lessons. As I was looking over this lesson, I was somewhat amused, I guess, about some of the fanciful and far-fetched and far-out interpretations of some of the parables. They were pretty funny. And so we want to make sure we stay away from that. Has anyone ever tried to solve a riddle? Parables are similar to riddles in some respect. Sometimes when we look at a riddle, if we don't immediately understand it, what do? We toss it aside and say, okay, forget that. All right? Well, riddles are made so that if you're going to understand it, you've got to really look at it in detail and go over it and over it. Well, that's similar to parables. Parables, if you're really going to get the central truth, the lesson it's trying to teach, often you're going to have to put a great deal of time and effort into it. Some are obviously, like everything else, much easier to understand than others. But as we're going to see this morning, Jesus told the parables for that specific reason, so that if you weren't willing to put the time and effort into it, you weren't going to understand what he was talking about. So it required effort on the hearer's part to understand. And that's one of the main reasons we'll see that Jesus talked in parables. And it has been said that nearly a third of Jesus' teaching came about through parables. So obviously this was something very important to Jesus. We want to start, and we'll do a little bit of background reading. Let's turn to Matthew 13 as we begin. Let's turn to Matthew 13. And very beginning in Matthew 13... It says, beginning in verse 1, on the same day Jesus went out of the house and sat by the sea, and great multitudes were gathered together to him, so that he got into a boat and sat, and the whole multitude stood on the shore. Then he spoke many things to them in parables. He spoke many things to them in parables. And then in verses 34 and 35 of that same chapter, all these things Jesus spoke to the multitudes in parables, and without a parable he did not speak to them, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophet, saying, I will open my mouth in parables, I will utter things kept secret from the foundation of the world. And that's a quote from Psalm 78. So it was prophesied, and I think this is an important detail, it was prophesied that Jesus would speak in parables. I'll have some people coming in. But it was prophesied that he would do that. And so when you look at Psalm 78, the whole chapter, it's a great psalm about why they were told, why Jesus spoke in parables. So he mentions many of the most remembered sayings of Jesus are his parables. And, you know, some of the things we learn as young people are the things that stick to us, like parables, like the Good Samaritan or the sower, and there's so many of them. that deal with parables. So what we're going to look at this morning are answers to the questions, what's a parable? Why did Jesus teach in parables? What are they about? And then, of course, most importantly, how should we interpret them? The word parable is basically just a transliteration. In other words, it's not a translation. A translation takes a word and gives an English meaning to it for us, where the word parable is just a Greek word that's turned into an English word. It's not translated at all, so it's said to be transliterated. And it comes from the Greek word, the verb anyway, para or parabole, and it means basically to place alongside or to throw alongside. Bole has the idea of throwing, and para or para is alongside. So you're throwing two things alongside so that you can compare them. And when we talk about parables, the two things, we have some earthly situation, people, activities, circumstances, and then we have some sort of spiritual lesson we get from it. So that's what we're doing. So that's what parables are all about. Vine's Dictionary says it signifies a placing of one thing beside another with a view to comparison. Another one says it's a story that places one thing beside another for the purpose of teaching. It puts the known next to the unknown so that we may learn. A parable can usually be identified by the use of the word like. Verses 31 and 33 of Matthew 13 says, another parable he put forth to them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like. Then verse 33, the kingdom of heaven is like. So often when we see that word like, we can know it's a parable. Most of the parables in the Bible say they are parables. Okay, there are some parables in the Old Testament, but we just talked about one on Wednesday night, didn't we? Nathan's parable to David, that was a classic Old Testament parable about the rich man who took the poor man's lamb and sacrificed it. That was a parable. And he told that particular reason. Nathan used a parable to get David to see that he was the one who had done the wrong. And Jesus sometimes uses parables for that same reason. Remember, he does that with the Pharisees a lot. He'll tell a parable, and the listeners will get angry about something happened in that parable, and then Jesus will say, well, you're the one that did it. Yes. That's very true.
And because everything that he talks about are real things, and so in rich man Lazarus, you know, I mean, we know all things possible with God, so this may be really taking place in sin, but still the purpose that he was telling it was telling, you know, relating something they did know about to something they didn't know about.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a very good point. Down near the bottom, a parable is usually a story or a narrative drawn from nature or human circumstances, as C.L. said. It deals with real things. It's not make-believe stuff. You know, it's not like a fable or a fantasy or, it deals with real things that really happened. It deals with, in the first century, a lot of them dealt with farming and agriculture. So this was real things. And the people to whom Jesus taught could relate to all these things. To sowing seed. Or a leaven. Or any of these other things. So these were things that people could relate to. So Jesus knew that this was a good way for people to remember spiritual truths. Those that wanted to know. Okay? You know, Jesus didn't force people to learn, did he? I've heard it said that all true education is self-education, and ultimately it's up to us whether we learn. That's the problem I have with public education right now. You can't force kids to learn. It's impossible. No one can force me to learn anything. If I choose not to learn it, guess what? I'm not going to learn it. Well, that's the way with parables. Jesus didn't force anybody to learn. He taught it in a way they could learn if they chose to. And one of the main purposes we're going to see for parables is he taught them that way so that they had to put forth effort to learn it. And when they did, they would remember it. But it was ultimately, like we said, up to them. A really common definition is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. And that's a, if you want a great, you know, kind of a short definition to a parable. Okay? It is some type of earthly story about real things, real circumstances, real types of people like farmers and fishermen and so forth. Real things. But they all have some sort of spiritual lesson. So at the very bottom, the primary purpose of parables, most people didn't understand them because most people had hard hearts. So let's go to Matthew 13 and we'll begin in verse 10. And we'll see that Jesus says this. Matthew 13 beginning in verse 10. This is after Jesus tells the parable of the sower. He says, "And the disciples came and said to him, 'Why do you speak to them in parables?' He answered and said to them, 'Because it's been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. Therefore, or because of that, I speak to them in parables. Because seeing they do not see, hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the hearts of this people have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they've closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn so that I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For surely I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it." This describes people who didn't want to learn. Now, they could have been, it could have been willful ignorance. They didn't want to learn. So they just kind of, you know, closed their mind. Said, "I'm not going to listen to this. I'm not going to, you know, I don't care. Don't tell me." And they might have just been rebellious. Jesus tried to teach a lot of rebellious people. And they didn't want it. So it could have been ignorance. It could have been prejudice. A lot of the Jews were prejudiced. So as I read verses 14 and 15, you know, hearing you will hear and shall not understand, seeing you will see and not perceive, for their hearts have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, their eyes have closed. That's my fourth hour class. I realized that when I read that. That's exactly who it is. I guess Jesus knew 2,000 years ago what class I was going to have, because that's exactly how they are. I mean, just, I ought to write that on the board tomorrow. Yes. Uh-huh, right.
Well, the disciples were the same way. Well, why did he tell them this? Because they wasn't analyzing themselves. They wasn't looking at what he was doing.
Yeah.
Because he's actually telling them, these are the kind of situations you're going to encounter. You're going to encounter people that's ready and willing to accept it. You're going to have people that accept it.
Amen.
And they didn't even get it. And what he said, he said, the mystery has been revealed to you. You know, but yet they didn't get it.
And you see a lot of times when we look at these, how Jesus, you know, is prompted by a situation or a question or something to reveal the answer in a parable. And that's how he reveals the answer. That's what he does. Sometimes he goes ahead and explains the parable. Sometimes he doesn't. You know, sometimes the parables are several verses long, and sometimes they're one or two verses. So a parable can be very short, but very profound at the same time. A lot of times, and I think this was true as to a lot of these people, people have a hard time understanding or receiving abstract ideas and truths. So Jesus illustrated them. But again, it was illustrated in a way that the people had to think about them and ponder them and focus on them before they would get the lesson. It wasn't just, you know, boom, I understand it. You know, they had to put forth effort to really, you know, get what Jesus was saying. And when you think about how much of Jesus' teaching was done this way, you again see how important it is for us to do just what he wanted them to do. We've got to open our eyes and open our ears, open our minds, which means we have to put forth some effort. Yes?
That reminds me so much of Paul's conversion. He revealed himself to Paul, but yet Paul had to go do things.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Took time. Yep.
He had to think and apply mm-hmm. what's been said to me to,
yep.
to himself.
It wasn't automatic. That's true. And the good things are not. Yes?
I think it's significant here that we realize that Jesus was searching for people who would put forth the effort.
Yeah.
That he was wanting people that wanted to know
yep.
more about him.
It was about desire.
It's a good way to weed out the insincere from
yep.
the sincere people.
Yeah, that's right.
And get to the ones who are serious about it.
That's right. That's why, you know, he goes back and quotes from the Old Testament about, you know, these people have closed their own ears. God didn't close their ears. They closed their own ears. Or they closed their eyes. They closed their minds. And so they had to want to know truth. And people haven't changed from the first century. They're exactly the same way today. You know, they have to want to know spiritual truths. They have to want to know these things to actually learn them. So a lot of people at that time had hard hearts. Just like they do today. You know, people haven't changed at all. he mentions he would often explain the parables in private to his disciples, as we'll see in a number of situations. He did that. By doing this, Jesus effectively separated the truth seekers from the curiosity seekers. Those seeking the truth would say, "Explain to us the parable," whereas the simply curious could easily be sent away. If they weren't really interested, they weren't going to stay around. You had to be really interested in knowing what Jesus was teaching. Again, to put forth the effort. If you really wanted to know. So this was, as David said, it was a way of weeding people out. The people who really were sincere and wanted to know truth. And as he mentioned, he used parables to carry out divine judgment. You know, you had to have a good heart. You had to have listening ears to understand. And it's interesting, as you look at the progression of the parables, as the opposition to Jesus increased, the force of the parables increases as well, as we're going to see in this study. Yes?
Something you just said, listening ears. Now, I used to apply this to my kids in school. They would hear what you said, but they didn't listen to what
yeah.
you said.
Yeah.
You hear the sound. I mean, I tell them, would you hear that sometimes in the wintertime you hear the barns running? I said, we
yeah.
hear that, but we're not sitting here listening to it at all.
Yeah.
I said, it's
yeah.
there. We hear the sound. I said, so you have to listen. You have to put effort into it.
Yeah.
Not hear the sound.
Yeah. And that's all about parables is putting forth effort. You have to put forth effort. So he did want to reveal truth, especially about the kingdom of heaven. Most all the parables are in some way related to the kingdom of heaven. says, even though the primary purpose in telling parable was to conceal the mysteries of the kingdom from the multitude, for once the disciples understood the basic meaning of the parables, then they could apply that to the kingdom of heaven. It says the comparison of the known, the earthly truths, with the unknown, the heavenly truths, would shed further light on the unknown. And this was a way to help people remember these spiritual truths. He mentions the theme of the parables is almost always about the kingdom of heaven, some aspect of it. And he gives a whole bunch of examples, several parables that all start with the kingdom of heaven is like. Jesus, let's go back and read Matthew 4. I was reading that yesterday. That's a very relevant passage. Matthew chapter 4, verse 17. Matthew 4:17 says, this is at the very, basically at the very beginning of his ministry. From that time, Jesus began to preach and to say, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." And then verse 23, "And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom." One of the reasons I think he was doing this was because the kingdom that he was bringing was so vastly different than any of the other kingdoms that the people knew about. It wasn't an earthly, physical kingdom. There wasn't going to be an earthly throne or any of those things. So he had to teach a lot about the kingdom because it was so different. It talks about the character of the kingdom, and he lists some about the mustard seed and so forth. They talk about the character of the kingdom, what it was going to be like. Sometimes the parables deal with the king, who is, of course, Christ. Sometimes it talks about the subjects, and he mentions persistent widow, good Samaritan, and so forth. Now, we come to the interpretation of the parables. And this is, you know, this is the key about all of this, is the interpretation of the parables, what we have to look for, and so forth. You know, the parables were there to inform, convince, persuade, motivate. Jesus told a lot of these parables so they would make good decisions. Make good decisions about the kingdom, about how to live in the kingdom, about how to respond to other people, how the kingdom was going to... How those people were going to be judged. He gives a couple of parables about that. I wrote, many of the parables are clustered around scenes of controversy. So there was a lot of controversial points that prompted parables as well. It says there's two extremes to avoid. Seeking to find some spiritual truth in every little detail. I don't remember which parable it was I was reading about yesterday. And there was some bizarre... I mean, I was reading it in one of the references about this parable and the bizarre interpretation the writer put on it. It was almost laughable. It was so ridiculous. But this guy actually thought that's what the parable was about. I mean, it was so far out there, you just wouldn't believe it. And that was the reason. He was doing exactly what we need to make sure we don't do. Jesus, sometimes when he explains it, some of the details are very important. So sometimes when Jesus puts details in parables, when he explains them, some of the details are extremely important. So it's not that the details are never important, but it's our job to do the work, put forth the effort, the time, the energy in determining that. So there's work involved. If we're really wanting to understand and learn and get out of the parable what we need to get out, we've got to do the work because there's a lot to get out of it. Usually there's a central truth, but sometimes there's more than one truth that's... presented. He gives some guidelines here, and I'm going to give some more in a minute. Learn from the explanations Jesus gave in those parables that he explains. A lot of the parables are explained by Jesus. And he tells us exactly what the parable means. Of course, the first one he gives there about the sower is obviously one. But he explains others as well. Look for the central truth of the parable, making sure that any other truths gleaned from the parable are in harmony with it. Consider carefully the context, and I would put this at the top of the list. If we don't look at what prompted the parable in the first place, we're bound to misunderstand it. The parables were prompted every time, and then Jesus gave a parable. Sometimes in response to a question, sometimes in response to a situation or circumstances. And so there was always a context to the parables. Whether it was a 2-line parable or a 20-line parable, there was always a context. So look for an introduction or an application. This is a great guideline. Don't use parables to formulate new doctrine, and often that's done. Everything else in the Bible is ignored, and so a parable is taken, and somehow all kinds of new doctrines are formed that are not taught anywhere else in the Bible. And that's not what Jesus is doing at all. Remember, parables were originally told to conceal, so they're not always that clear in their meaning, which means we have to put forth effort. So don't try and build a case for a doctrine based solely on a parable, because parables never contradict other parts of Scripture. That goes back to the effort again. We have to look at what other Scripture says about that particular lesson or truth or principle. If we just ignore the rest of the Bible, we're going to come up with ridiculous and absurd interpretations of parables. Here. Here's some really good points when you're studying a parable. This is really good. The central truth can be identified by understanding what question, occasion, problem, or need is portrayed in the historical setting. Look for that. Was there a question? What was the occasion? Did a problem come up? Is there a need that he's addressing? Look for those situations. Look for those. Here are 7 questions that we need to ask every time we start a parable. Every time. These are not in your handout, but it would probably be great to write them down, because they're super, super questions about helping to understand and interpret parables. Number 1, what terms are repeated in the parable and which are not? What terms are repeated in the parable? In other words, if the parable, you know, goes over and over and over some particular term or point, it's obviously important. So what terms are repeated in the parable? Which ones are not repeated in the parable? It's a good suggestion, a good question to answer when you're looking at a parable. And 2, upon what does the parable dwell? In other words, what does the parable spend most of its time talking about? What's most of the space devoted to? Again, it must be important. If most of the parable is devoted to some point or topic or whatever, then that's an important thing to know and understand in the parable. Number 3, what's the main contrast found in the parable? A lot of parables have a contrast in them, contrasting things. Like the Good Samaritan, for instance. That's a classic one that contrasts 2 different types of people. So what's the main contrast in the parable? 4, what comes at the end of the parable? Or you can say, what's the conclusion of the parable? So what comes at the end of it? Number five, what is spoken in direct discourse? In other words, if there's people talking, what are they saying? What are the specific words given in the conversation? Now, some parables don't have that, but if they do, that conversation must be important. That goes back if the rich man and Lazarus are considered a parable or not, but there's a conversation in there, isn't there? And that conversation is very important to understanding what's going on. So look for conversation. Number six, what characters appear in the parable? What characters appear in the parable? You know, what are they like? Or what do they do? Usually there's two that's the most important characters. That's not always true, but usually there's two that's the most important characters in a parable. And they're used to, you know, establish or determine the main point, the central truth. And number seven, how would you have told the parable? Because if Jesus told it differently, does this reveal something to you? So how would you have told the parable? And if Jesus doesn't tell it that way, why? That's a one you really have to think about. So when we start looking at parables, and especially focusing on the kingdom of heaven, we're going to try and look at these suggestions, these guidelines, these questions to keep us on track so that we won't come up with fanciful ideas and lessons. And I think that will be a great way to approach these. Thank you very, very much this morning.